We continue on, Raffaele finally replies, and none of us says anything different. It is simply too late to turn back now. Even if it may not even be possible to step inside our destination when we have come so far, I should have listened to Violetta all those months ago when she had tried to take away my powers. I should have let her. Perhaps she would still be alive if I'd done so. Perhaps we could have acted sooner, somehow. Perhaps we could have had more time together. The guilt sits like a weight in my chest. I should have listened, but it doesn't matter anymore. None of this seems to matter anymore. As the soldiers begin to pile more stones at her feet, I take out a knife sheathed at my belt, reach out and cut a length of Violetta's locks. The warmth of my hand melts the ice on the strands. I entwine it with a length of my own silver hair, taking in for a moment the contrast, thinking back on the lazy afternoons when she used to weave my braids.
"I love you, Adelina,"
she used to tell me. The dried tears on my face crack when I move. We stay for as long as we can, until finally Maeve commands us forward. I look back and try to hold Violetta's grave marker in my sights until she disappears around a bend. One morning blurs into another. The twilight becomes darker each day, and the snow turns steady. No one crosses our path. It is as if we were traveling at the edge of the world. Our travel settles into long silences, where none of us feel in the mood to speak. Even Maggiano rides quietly by my side, his expression dark. The energy of this terrain pulls us forward, calling to us. I see illusions at night, and during the twilight days, see them chased away only by the light of our fires. Sometimes, the ghost of Violetta walks alongside my horse. Her dark hair doesn't move in the wind, and her boots leave no prints in the snow. She never looks my way. Our path turns narrow, branching a dozen different ways every few hours, each leading deep into yet another set of mountains. Without Raffaele's guidance, I have no doubt that we would lose ourselves out here in the cold. Then, one day, we halt in front of a yawning cave. It is an ominous entrance, its mouth lined with jagged rock, leading into complete and utter darkness. Still, we never would have found this place without the pull of its energy. Here I can feel the tangible presence of the pulsing power that calls to us, the strength of it like a thousand threads tugging against every muscle in my body. "We have to go alone," Maeve says as she trots up beside us. "My men, they cannot follow us this way." She nods to our horses, some of which have thin trickles of blood dripping from their nostrils. Their suffering gets worse the closer they get to the entrance. My own stallion refuses to take another step forward. I look back at Maeve's troops. They also hang back. I'd never thought about how an energy powerful enough to affect each of the young elites might end up affecting common men. But now I can see it on their faces. Some have a sheen of cold sweat on their skin, while others look pale and weak. They've come as far as they can. If they enter this cave with us, they will die. Maeve swings off her horse and nods at one of her soldiers. "Take them back with you," she says. The soldier hesitates. Behind him, the others shift too. "You will be left in a frozen wasteland, Your Majesty," he replies, glancing around at us. You are the Queen of Beldane. How will you make it back?" Maeve fixes him with a hard stare. "We will find our own way," she says. "If you join us, you will not survive. This is not a request. This is a command." Even then, the soldier lingers a moment longer. I find myself looking on in longing and envy, bitterness and grief. Would any of my soldiers in Kenetra be so loyal to me? Would they follow me out of love if I did not use fear against them? Finally, he nods and bows his head. Yes, Your Majesty. He places one hand over his chest, then kneels in the snow before her. We will wait for you at the bottom of the pass. We will not leave until we see you return. Do not ask us to leave you entirely, Your Majesty. Maeve nods. Her hard composure cracks. The only moment I've ever seen it do so. She suddenly seems very young.
Very well,
she replies. The soldier stands and shouts an order to the troops. They salute their queen before turning their horses around, making their way down the path that we'd originally come. I stand in silence, watching them go. Would my soldiers ever salute me in honor? When the sound of hooves fade to a dull rumble, Maeve returns to join us at the entrance of the cave. No matter how hard I try to stare into it, I can't see anything except black. It is as if there were nothingness on the other side and we would fall into it if we enter. Raffaele stands at the edge and closes his eyes. He takes a deep breath, then shudders. He doesn't need to speak for me to know what he is going to say. I can feel the pull. We all can. The dark of night is at the end of this cave. Taryn draws his sword and a long knife, while Lucent and Maggiano do the same. I stand close to Maggiano as we start to walk in. Violetta's absence is a gaping void beside me. If she were here, I would tell her to stay close. She would give me a quiet nod. But she isn't here. So I turn to face the darkness without her and walk in. I am too afraid to wonder whether we will be able to walk out. I can see nothing at first, and it makes me hesitate with every step I take. Our footsteps echo in the darkness, coupled with the sound of metal occasionally scraping against stone. The others must be using their swords as a guide along the edge of the cave. The air is bitterly cold in here and smells of something ancient, salt and stone and wind. I gulp over and over again, trying to keep myself from thinking that the walls are caving in on us. If only I could see, if only I could see. My old fear of blindness now flares to life, taking on a shape of its own in this darkness. And I think I can see the eyes of monsters in here, their stares fixed on me. You will never get out of here, the whispers chant, pleased at my rising terror. You will live in darkness forever, just as you deserve. I jump when a hand, warm and calloused, touches mine. You're all right. Maggiano's voice comes out of the darkness like a beacon, and I turn toward him. You're all right. You're all right. I force the whispers in my head to repeat this, and slowly, the mantra gives me the strength to take one step after another. After what seems like forever, my vision finally starts to adjust. I can see the subtle grooves of stone in the cave's ceiling, looming several feet above us. And from inside the grooves comes a faint ice-blue glow. Slowly, as more of the cave comes into focus, I can see the glow emanating from nearly every crevice in the ceiling. My steps slow as I try to get a better look at it. The light comes from millions of tiny, dangling beads of ice. They shimmer and twinkle, pulsing in a pattern, and they seem to gleam the strongest where we pass. For a moment, I forget my fear and just stand there, unable to tear my gaze away from their beauty. Ice fairies, Raffaele says, his voice echoing to us from somewhere in front. Tiny creatures of the north. They must have awoken at the ripple of our movement in the air. I have seen them described in the accounts of priests on their pilgrimages here. This is the place that travelers worship as the dark of night. But they go no farther. The glow lights our way, leading us along a trail painted by stardust. Minutes pass. Hours. At some point, I feel the faint bite of a cold breeze against my face. We must be nearing the cave's exit. I tense, wondering what lies on the other side. Beside me, Violetta's ghost walks in and out of the shadows, faded and gray. The wind turns steady until we round a curve in the cavern and find ourselves looking at an exit. I suck in my breath the glittering world of snow beyond it. I have heard the myths about this place, the dark of night. But I am standing in front of it now, staring into an untouched, magical world. This is the entrance connecting our world with the gods, and we cannot enter without Violetta's alignment, her link to empathy. Raffaele stands at the entrance and reaches out a hand tentatively. He shudders, and so do I. The energy beyond this entrance is overwhelming. A million threads to every one in the mortal world. Something so intense that I fear it may crush me if I dare to step through. When the priests come searching for this place, is this where they stop? Do they sit under the light of the ice fairies and admire the beads of ice dangling in the cavern? Perhaps mere mortals cannot even tell that this entrance is here. Perhaps the energy here is so strong it is lost on them. Raffaele stands there for a long moment, hovering between one space and another. Then he looks at us. He is going to step through. "We are already ghosts," he whispers. I open my mouth, wanting to stop him, then close it. He is right, as he always is. If this is how we must end, then so be it. Raffaele takes a deep breath, and I study his silhouette in this dim blue light, this magical realm outlined in a halo as if for the last time. Beside me, Maggiano nods and takes my hand. Maeve and Lucent stand together. Taryn looks ahead without fear. There is a space beside me where Violetta would have stood. Without her, I am less afraid of dying. Without her, the world is that much darker. Raffaele steps through, and we follow. It is said that the dark of night can be entered solely by those who have known and suffered true loss, that only through surviving such agony can a mortal understand what it is like to set foot inside a realm of the gods. Tales of Travelers to the Dark of Night. Compiled by Ye Tsun Lee. Adelina Amuteru. My boots sink into fresh snow that looks untouched for miles. A forest of frosted trees towers around us, their branches bare and layered with thick blankets of white. What freezes us all in our tracks, though, is the sight of the three moons in the night sky. They are enormous, great and golden and cold, covering half the sky, so large that I feel as if I could reach up and brush my fingers along their marble surfaces. Sheets of stars litter the sky, the constellations impossibly bright. We are close to the heavens here. As I stare, a curtain of faint green dances against the stars, undulating, appearing, and disappearing in complete silence. I have never seen the night like this. It is as if the realm of the gods were reaching down to greet us here, and our mortal world yearning up in return. "Gods," Maggiano gasps beside me. "We entered, after all. How is this possible? We shouldn't have. It should have killed us." Beside me, Raffaele stares in astonishment. When I look over my shoulder, I notice Taryn. Like the rest of us, he is frozen in place at the sight. His pale eyes are very wide and his mouth is open. There are tears in his eyes and frozen streaks on his face. I can hear him whispering a prayer as he stares, so moved by the beauty of this entrance of the gods. We make our way through the untouched land. The pulse of the origin is a steady beat now, guiding each of us along. The snow crunches softly under our boots. I tremble in the cold.
The whispers in my head burst into chaotic voices, with every step I take growing stronger the closer we get to the origin. I try again to keep them at bay, but gradually they start to drown out the silence around me until I can't hear even our footsteps or our breathing anymore. The whispers speak nonsense now, in a language too ancient for me to understand. The trees in this forest seem to blur and shift every time I blink, and I rub my eye trying to make myself focus. Now and then, something flashes across my vision. A shape, a figure, I'm not sure. Other times, I see abandoned houses covered with snow and broken glass. Each time, I shake my head and cast it out of my mind, telling myself to focus. I can control my illusions. This is my power, even if we are standing in the realm of the gods. Another shape darts between the trees and vanishes. I stop to look for it. No use, it's already gone. I look back at Maggiano. There is something in the forest, I whisper. He frowns, then glances at the gaps between the trees, and at that moment I stop. My stare goes up to the trees. I halt in my tracks. Beside me, Maggiano turns and gives me an alarmed look. What is it? He asks. But I can't answer him. All I can do is stare at the dead bodies hanging from the trees. They hang from the branches all around us, dangling by their necks from ropes. Their bodies look gray, their faces ashen, and as I look on in horror, I start to recognize each one of them. The one closest to me is my father. His chest is skeletal as always, caved in, and drops of blood stain the white snow underneath him. Nearby is Enzo, his hair a deep, black scarlet, his neck broken, the same droplets of blood under his swaying body. Behind him is Gemma, her familiar face still half covered by her purple marking. There is the Night King of Meritas, whom I'd once run through with a sword. There is Dante, his face contorted in pain. There are Inquisition guards I've killed, soldiers from foreign lands I've conquered, and rebels I've executed for daring to defy my rule. And there is my sister, my latest victim. They are all here, their eyes open and trained on me, their lips cracked, expressions solemn. The whispers in my head grow to a roar, and I realize that the voices have always been their voices, the voices of those I have killed, growing and growing over the years as more have died.
What wolf? You're a little lamb. This whisper was Dante's voice. Broken so easily. Enzo. The dead cannot exist in this world on their own. Gemma. You do not leave until I say so.
The Night King of Meritas.
Go ahead. Finish the job.
My father. All this time, the voices have been the whispers of the dead, growing in number, taunting me, haunting me, driving me to madness for their blood that stains my hands. I stumble backward with a choked gasp. Maggiano rushes to catch me before I fall in the snow. Adelina! He exclaims. The others stop to look at me, too. What's happening? What are you seeing?
I see everyone, I sob. Enzo, Gemma, my father, my sister. They're all here, Maggiano. Oh, gods, I can't do this. I can't go on. My knees give way, and I sink, still unable to tear my gaze from the sight. This isn't real, the rational part of me tries to say. All an illusion, just a nightmare. This isn't real. Except it is real. Except all of these people really are dead, and they are dead because of me. Don't make me go in there. I whisper, clinging to Maggiano's arms as he leans over me. Raffaele approaches and kneels in the snow beside me.
While farther ahead, Maeve, Lucent, and Taryn look on, Raffaele takes one of my hands. As I struggle to regain control over my power, he begins to use his. I can feel his threads intertwining with my heart, seeking the panic and fear within me and pushing it gently down. My desperate stare goes from the hanging bodies to Raffaele's beautiful face, his olive skin and his black hair framed by snow, the ice lining his long lashes, the green and gold of his eyes. "Breathe, mi Adelinetta," he whispers. "Breathe." I try to do as he says. Raffaele is not Violetta. He cannot save me from my power. But slowly, gradually, his soothing begins to smooth over the raging tides of energy in my chest that threaten to drive me mad. I feel the energy settling, and with it, the bodies begin to fade. They look like ghosts, translucent and floating. Then they turn so faint, I can no longer see them. My breath fogs in the air. My limbs feel weak, like I've just been swimming for hours. I lean heavily against Maggiano. Finally, Raffaele stops. He looks exhausted too, as if it were harder to work his magic here against mine. I take a deep breath, then nod and draw away from Maggiano. "I'm all right," I say, trying to convince myself of it. The energy here overwhelms me. Raffaele nods once. "It pulls at me too," he tells me gently, in a million different directions. "This is not an easy place to be, a realm between us and the gods." Lucent walks over to me and offers me her hand. I stare in surprise. When I take it, she helps me to my feet. Beside her, Maeve nods at me once. There is something lighting her face, a sudden recognition. "Your sister," she says. "You said you saw her back there, as an illusion, a ghost of the dead." "Yes," I whisper. "So that is why," Maeve murmurs. "Of course." She glances at Raffaele. "You said all of our alignments to the gods must be in the immortal realm in order for us to be here." Maeve looks back at me. "We were able to enter without Violetta's alignments." "Because her soul is already in the immortal world," Raffaele finishes, understanding. His eyes soften at me. "In the underworld. She is already here," I realize. And somehow this thought sends a wild surge of hope through me. "She is already here. Perhaps I can see her again." "We can't be far," Maeve says, turning away from me and continuing again down the snowy path through the forest. The pulse keeps getting stronger. The others all feel it too. I am not alone. "We're not far. We're almost there." I repeat it to myself, letting it comfort me and calm my energy. "We are not far from Violetta, where she waits for us in the realm of Moritas." The others turn away and I start walking after them. Maggiano stays beside me, his hand now intertwined with mine. I try to concentrate on the warmth coming from him. I'm too afraid to look back at the treetops for fear that I will see the dangling bodies again. I am afraid that this time I might see bodies of those still alive, those who can still die. As we go, the moons seem to move in the skies, edging closer together, growing ever larger until they look like they might hurtle right into us. They are going to align, I realize, each overlapping the next when we reach the entrance to the origin point. At the edges of my vision, dark shapes still flitter through the forest, vanishing when I try to look at them directly. I grasp for the threads in my chest, and then try to hold on as tightly as I can to stop my unconscious weaving. The figures waver and vanish for a while, but they don't go away altogether. Finally, ahead of us, Maeve and Taryn slow down. Through the forest and the night, A thin shaft of light shines in a clearing. I see it first. It glows against the bark of the trees, and as we round the corner, the glow intensifies, washing the landscape in an ethereal blue-white light. I squint. The trees grow sparse, then stop altogether. We step out into an enormous clearing of pristine snow. From here we can see a valley nestled deep in the center of sharp, steep mountain ranges with forests growing wild on either side. In the middle of this valley is the source of the blue-white light, a narrow beam that seems to be pouring from another realm. At the same time, the pulse of energy that I have been feeling for the past few days suddenly intensifies a dozenfold, sending a sharp stab of pain through my chest that reminds me of the way Enzo's tether had pulled. I gasp. The others do too. They must have been affected in similar ways. Maggiano groans and clutches his head, while Raffaele hunches over and winces. Ahead of us, Maeve falls to a kneel, while Taryn stabs his sword into the snow and leans against it. My illusions flare, sending sparks of dark silhouettes dancing through the snow around us. This is the origin, the point where Laertes had once descended from the heavens to become immortal, where the energy of the immortal world had originally torn, seeping into our world, where the dark of night formed around it, twisted by divine energy, where the story of the elites began. Even without Raffaele, I can feel the energy emanating from this place, made of threads from every god, war and wisdom, fear and fury, ambition and passion. I stand closer to Maggiano, touch his arm, and move toward Raffaele. As I do, something flickers in the forests of the valley. At first, I think it must be my illusions again. Dark shapes, silhouettes that look like monsters. Except that Taryn also turns to look at them. He raises his sword at the same time Maeve does. "What is that?" he asks. As the words leave his mouth, one of the shadows wanders out of the forest and into the clearing. It makes a sharp, clicking noise with its teeth. I recoil in horror. The creature has no eyes at all, only two soft, empty sockets where they might once have been, and a wide mouth full of fangs. It skitters forward on four legs, leaving prints in the untouched snow. In its wake hovers a blanket of fury, an energy so dark and vile that it makes me ill. Behind it comes another, then a third. They emerge from every corner of the forest, licking their lips. "They are drawn to our energy," Raffaele whispers, his eyes wide. "Monsters." The whispers of the dead tell me. "Monsters from the underworld." I glance back at the way we came. More shadows stir in the forests behind us. They are suddenly everywhere, drawn out by our powers. The clicking of their teeth echoes through the trees. "Run!" We all break into a sprint toward the beam of light. Our sudden movement causes several of the creatures to swivel their heads in our direction. They sniff the air, then pull their mouths open to reveal sharp fangs. They bolt. My breath comes in ragged gasps as the icy air burns my lungs. In front of me, Lucent stumbles in the snow. I reach out and catch her before she goes down. Maeve pulls away from us, leaving some room between herself and Taryn, then twirls her blade. Her eyes narrow into slits. She bares her teeth, hefts the weapon as one of the creatures draws near and swings at it. The creature snarls and lunges toward her. Maeve's sword slices right across its gaping jaws, slashing deep into each side of its mouth. The creature screams. The sound is deafening. A shudder of fury and fear ripples through me at the attack. It is as if Maeve had cut me along with the creature. Maeve herself winces too. "We both align with the underworld,"
These creatures are monsters from the immortal realm. Creatures that are a part of us, connected to us. Maeve slashes at the creature again. This time she catches it in its side and sends it tumbling into the snow. There it twitches while Maeve continues to run. Hurry, she shouts. Behind her, the creature starts to rise again. Taryn fans out to our other side as we hurtle between the trees toward the blue beam. He swings at two creatures that come at us from the right. His swing is so powerful that it slices straight through the first creature's neck, decapitating it, before hacking deep into the second creature's chest. The first falls writhing in the snow, spilling black blood everywhere, while the second screams and thrashes. I gasp at the rush of pain from its death, stumble and clutch at my neck. Lucent does the same. Maeve staggers to us, hauls us to our feet, and motions for us to keep going. We run faster. Maggiano darts away from my side. He spins around to face a growling creature behind us, draws a pair of daggers, and stabs them deep into the creature's face. Another jolt of pain courses through me. He yanks out the blades. We keep running as the creature collapses, shrieking. I reach the valley first. Here, the trees are so close together they seem to form a maze leading to the center of the origin point. As we run, I look through the trunks and see my reflection flash by in small pockets of ice amongst the snow, fleeting and distorted. My face is pale, my hair a stream of silver. I look panic-stricken. Watch out! I shout at Raffaele as a creature barrels through the maze and trees toward us. Raffaele jumps back in time for the creature to lodge its face in between a split trunk. It snarls and claws for us through the narrow gap, fangs snapping. Raffaele stumbles backward and falls in the snow. A sword streaks out of nowhere to cut the creature nearly in half. It's Taryn, both hands gripping the hilt of his sword tightly, standing over Raffaele like a strange guardian. More creatures leap for him. He swings at them, forcing them back. Another creature dies by his blade. Move! Taryn snaps over his shoulder at Raffaele. Don't make me save you again. Raffaele needs no second warning. He leaps to his feet and continues running for the beam of light. I do the same. Behind us, Taryn pulls out a long knife and stabs one more creature. Then another leaps out in front of us, landing deep in the powder snow. It turns its sightless sockets on us and smiles with its fanged mouth. Beside me, Lucent rises from her painful crouch and grits her teeth, then brandishes her own sword and swings at the creature. The whispers burst to life in my head, and I can almost understand what it wants. It focuses on me. Kill them, it says. A shudder ripples through my body. The creature takes a step forward. No, I think in return. You are one of us. You don't need them to visit the underworld. You belong there yourself. It is your home. The poison of the whispers seeps deep into my mind. I turn to look at Raffaele, and my thoughts fill with a sudden influx of hatred. Raffaele must see the change in my expression because he suddenly pulls away from me. Lucent's eyes widen. No, Adelina! She shouts. I clench my fists. No, I think, hanging on to Lucent's cry. No. The creature snarls. It lunges for me, only to skewer itself on Lucent's blade. She had moved in front of me so quickly that I didn't even see it. The creature screams, even as a spasm of pain shoots through me at its dying throes. Lucent yanks her blade out of its chest with a labored growl, and together with Raffaele, we run around its flailing body. We are so close to the origin now, but more creatures crowd around from all sides, their hulking shapes gathering near the beam of light and behind us. We continue to run. Ahead of us, a cluster of creatures surrounds the light, and they turn their hideous faces in our direction. Maeve appears, bares her teeth, and flings herself at them. I reach within to weave a cloud of illusions around her and the others, trying to make them as invisible as I can. There are too many of us in motion. I can't hold the illusion, but it is enough to give them some cover. Then, from somewhere, comes Taryn. He's breathing heavily, his eyes wild with fury, his mouth twisted into a wide smile. His blades are covered in black blood while his own clothes are stained red. He meets my stare, then turns to face the creatures. With a roar, he charges at them. The creatures swarm him, but even then they can't seem to take him down. He still fights like a beast while the rest of us gather by the origin. The light is bright enough here that I need to shield my eye from it. I look back at Taryn again. One of the creatures sinks its jaws deep into his shoulder. He lets out a roar of agony. In the same moment, he twists around and stabs the creature deep in the neck. I wince. The creature tears its fangs out of his shoulder with a shriek. I throw my energy out in Taryn's direction, trying to prevent him from feeling the pain. Maggiano darts past me along with Maeve. "Give us some cover!" he shouts back at me. He glances at the others. "Keep going!" Before I can tell him to stop, he's gone, dashing to where Taryn is trying to fend off the monsters. He draws his daggers and flings one at a creature clawing at Taryn's back. At the same time, Maeve pulls an arrow from her sheath and aims it at a second creature preparing to lunge at Taryn. She fires. Both attacks hit their marks. The creatures scream and fall back, but more continue to come. Through it all, Taryn fights like a demon himself. It takes me a moment to realize that he's laughing. He closes his eyes. "The gods speak," he shouts as the creatures rip at him. And an instant later, one of the monsters plunges its razor-sharp claws straight through Taryn's back, the black nails protruding from his chest. I shudder, stunned. Maeve lets out a gasp while Maggiano freezes. Then they are on the move again, rushing toward him, but Taryn's eyes are wide, his mouth open. Blood trickles from the corners of his lips. His body tries to heal around the creature's claws, but they remain buried in his heart. He trembles. A flash of Enzo's dying moments returns to me, followed by the memory of Giulietta's final breaths. Maggiano flings himself onto the creature still skewering Taryn. He's strong enough to knock the creature backward. He is channeling Taryn's power. I pull harder, trying to inflict an illusion of pain on the creatures. They shriek at me, but my illusion cannot bring them down. Maeve swings her sword at the still advancing creature that Maggiano had just attacked. Her blade cuts the demon's arm clean off. As the creature writhes, Taryn collapses. I know before his body even hits the snow that he will not make it. A ringing blocks out the sound in my ears. I can barely believe it, but Taryn is still smiling. His eyes are turned in my direction. There is a moment of silence. We stand, stunned, at the sight. Maeve and Maggiano carefully roll Taryn onto his back while I hurry forward a few steps to see him. He is limp, his breathing slow and shallow. His eyes are hooded. The wound in his chest is healing, but it is not healing fast enough. "Taryn," I say, leaning over him. His eyes flutter open for a moment. He has trouble focusing on any of us, and instead his gaze ends up resting somewhere on the night sky above. "Now I am forgiven," he murmurs, so quietly that I think I misunderstand him. I wait for his chest to rise again, but it doesn't. I find myself looking down at the snow, willing myself to remember my first encounters with him. how he'd tied me to the stake and wished me to burn, how he'd threatened my sister and taken Enzo's life, how even after that he continued to torment Malfettos and elites alike, how I drove him mad enough to take his own lover's life. I know without a doubt that he deserved to die. So why am I sad? I reach up and feel tears on my face. Why do I care what happens to him? I'd kept him a prisoner of my own, hated him, and tortured him. I should be thrilled in this moment to see his blood running through the snow, the vacant, lifeless white of his eyes. Taryn is dead, and I do not know why I cry for him. I have killed and destroyed too. I have hurt. Perhaps we have always been one and the same, just as he used to tell me. And now that he's gone, I feel a sudden rush of exhaustion, a freeing grief. His death marks the end of a long chapter in my life. He will be in the underworld, waiting for us. The monsters in the woods are still drawing near. Maeve and Maggiano run toward the light. I follow them in a daze, the world still quiet around me, the snow blurring, with the creatures at our backs, gaining on us fast, and the blinding blue-white light before us. I tear my gaze away from him, take a deep breath, and step in at the same time as the others. Medina. Have I arrived? Is this truly the ocean of the underworld? Formidity. Speak, child, for you stand at the gates of death. Medina. O goddess, O angel of fear, I cannot bear to look upon you. Eight Princes by Tristan Chursley. Adelina Amuteru. Energy floods me. It fills every crevice in my mind and body, threads of power from every god. Fear, fury, prosperity and death, empathy and beauty, love and wisdom and time, joy and war and greed. I feel everything at once. It burns my insides with its sheer intensity, and for an instant I think I won't be able to stand it. I want to scream. Where are the others? I can no longer hear Maggiano's voice or Raffaele's shouts. I can no longer sense anything but the light and the energy. I try to open my eye, and in that instant, I think I see a glimpse of the heavens beyond the sky and the waters deep below the mortal oceans. Gradually, the light starts to fade. The air turns cold again, but it is different from the winds in the dark of night. It is a cold that burrows deep into my bones, a numbness that nestles there near my heart and wraps it in a cocoon of ice. Tentatively, I open my eye. The world around me is hazy and gray. I recognize this gray. It is that of the underworld. Under my feet is the feeling of cold water. On one side of me is Maggiano. On my other is Raffaele, then Maeve, and Lucent. We have crossed into the world of the gods. Although the underworld's ocean looms at our feet, we do not sink into the water. Instead, we stand on top of it as if we were weightless. When I look down at the water, I notice that not a single ripple disturbs its surface. A mirror of the eternal gray sky around it, the realm between the heavens and the earth, the space where you are neither here nor there. The water is dark, almost black, but completely transparent. Far below glide the silhouettes of enormous creatures, the same that I've seen countless times in my nightmares of the underworld. Except now we are here. Adelina. The whisper echoes all around us, reverberating deep in my heart. It is a voice I know well. I look up at the same time everyone else does. There, some distance away, a pale figure with long black hair walks on the surface of the ocean toward us. As she draws near, I am unable to move. The others remain frozen in place. A chill lodges in my chest. Adelina. Then she whispers the others' names, too. You do not belong here. You are from the world of the living. Formidity, the angel of fear. She has come to claim us. Her hair trails all across the ocean, stretching on beyond the horizon so that the sea behind her is nothing but a field of dark strands. She is the body of a child, but skeletal. Her face is featureless, as if skin were stretched tightly across it, and she is whiter than marble. Suddenly, I am reminded of the first time I ever saw her in my nightmares, on the evening right after Raffaele had tested me for the Dagger Society. I bow as she approaches us, and the others do the same. Raffaele is the first to address her, his eyes cast down toward the water. Holy Formidity, he says, gatekeeper to the underworld. We murmur our own greetings at her. Beneath her layers of skin, she seems to smile at him. Return to the mortal world. We are here to save those like ourselves, Raffaele answers. He must be afraid of her, as are we all. But his voice stays steady and gentle, unrelenting. We are here to save the mortal world. Formidity's smile vanishes. She leans down toward us. The fear building in me grows, and my power grows with it, threatening to undo me. She looks first at Raffaele, and then turns to Maeve. Something about Maeve catches her interest. She steps closer to the Beldish Queen, then tilts her head in what can only be described as curiosity. You have a power, little one. You've pulled souls out of my mother's realm before, and taken them back to the living. Maeve bows her head lower. I can see her hand visibly trembling against her sword's hilt. Forgive me, Holy Formidity, she says. I was given a power I can only say was from the gods. I was the one who let you in, Formidity answers. You have learned since then, I know, that there are consequences for channeling the gods' powers. Please let us enter, Maeve says. We must fix what we have done. Still, Formidity waits. She looks at Lucent, then at Raffaele. Children of the gods, she says as she goes. And then she looks at me. The fear in my chest spikes. Formidity takes another step forward until her figure looms over me and casts a soft shadow across the ocean. She reaches down, one bony hand outstretched, and she touches me gently on my cheek. I cannot stop my power. An illusion of darkness bursts from all around. Silhouettes of ghostly arms and red eyes, visions of rainy nights and a horse's wild eyes, of a burning battleship, and long palace corridors. I stumble backward, tearing myself away from her touch. My child, Formidity says. Her strange, featureless smile returns. You are my child. I am hypnotized by her face. The fear swarming inside me makes me delirious. Formidity is silent for a moment. The ghostly calls of creatures from the deep echo up to us, as if they had been stirred to life by our presence. Finally, she nods once at us. When I look down again, the creature's shapes are closer to the surface and they crowd one another. My heart pounds faster. I know what this means and who is waiting for us beneath the surface. Formidity's twin angel. The water beneath us gives way. I drop into the depths and my head submerges. The world fills with the sound of being underwater. For an instant, I'm blind in the darkness, and I reach out instinctively for Maggiano, for Raffaele, for Maeve and Lucent. I find nothing. The silhouettes of enormous creatures glide around me in a circle. As I continue to sink, I get a glimpse of one of the creature's faces. Eyeless, finned, monstrous, fanged. I open my mouth to scream, but only bubbles emerge. I can't breathe. The energy of the underworld pulls me down, tugging hard on my chest, and I have no choice but to follow it. One of the creatures glides close to my face. It is Caldora herself, the Angel of Fury. She opens her jaws at me, and a low, haunting echo reverberates through the water. Even though I can't see the others, I can feel their presence. I'm not alone here. Follow me, Caldora's thoughts say, penetrating my mind. She turns away, and her long, scaly tail makes a loop in the water. I swim deeper and deeper with her. Follow me, follow me. Caldora's hiss becomes a rhythm in the water. Her voice blends with my own whispers, forming an eerie harmony. The water turns blacker and blacker until the pressure builds and I can no longer see anything. Not even Caldora swimming ahead of me. Not even the silhouettes of other creatures haunting the waters. It is just deep, black, endless space in all directions until eternity. I sink into the realm of death. How noble it must be, the pain of Moritas, to stand guardian forever to silent souls, to judge a life and choose to take it. Life and Death and Rebirth by Scholar Garun. Adelina Amuteru. I don't remember what happens or how I arrive. All I know is that I am here, standing on the shore of a flat, gray land, its edges lined by the quiet, unmoving surface of the underworld ocean. It is still as a pond. I look up, where the sky should be. There is instead the ocean, as if I were standing upside down on the sky and looking down at it. I turn to face inland. Everything is painted in the same muted tone of gray. The pulse of death beats all around me, the silence ringing rhythmically in my ears. I find myself staring at a flat landscape littered with thousands, millions, countless numbers of towering glass pillars. The pillars are iridescent and white. Each one is in the shape of a quartz and the color of moonstone, evenly spaced from the next, forming perfect rows that extend outward to the horizon and then tower high up into oblivion. Each pillar seems to shine with a faint silver-white light, a hue that sets it sharply apart from the uniform gray in the rest of this place. As I draw nearer to the first pillar, I see something inside it, suspended in the space of the stone. It is hard to make out the shape, although it seems long and blurred. I step up to the pillar and press one hand against it. There is a man inside. My hand jerks away as if the pillar were ice cold. I jump backward. The man's eyes are closed, and his expression is peaceful. Something about his face seems timeless, frozen, forever in the prime of his life. I study him a while longer. This is his soul, I suddenly realize. I turn away from him and look around at the pillars stretching as far as I can see. Each of these pillars is the final resting place of a soul from the mortal world, the remnants of that person long after flesh and bone have been reclaimed by the land.
This is the library of Moritas, all who have ever existed. My hands start to tremble. If this is where all the souls of the dead reside, then this is also where I will find my sister. I look around me, searching for the others. It takes me a long moment to notice the beam of light illuminating my body, as if marking me as a moment of life in this world of the deceased. Four other beams are scattered in the midst of this maze of lustrous pillars, their glow distinct against the backdrop of silver and gray. They seem very far away, each of us separated from the others by what seems like an infinite amount of space. Everyone enters the realm of death alone. Across this eerie landscape comes a whisper. It permeates every empty space around me, echoing up to the ocean in the sky. There is a darkness creeping forward, something greater than anything I have ever seen, a black cloud stretching from the heavens to the sea. It roils onward. Adelina. It is Moritas, the goddess of death. I know beyond the shadow of a doubt that this is her voice. You have come to bargain with me, Adelina. Yes, I answer in a whisper. We've all come to heal the tear between your world and ours. Yes, the others. The cloud towers before me. Your immortal energy has been missing from our realm for a long time. My powers, I start to say, but the words falter on my tongue. Even now, even after coming all this way. The whispers in my head churn, angry that I would consider giving them up. Step forward, Adelina, Moritas commands. I hesitate. The cloud before me is a terrifying tangle of black bruises and curves, shapes of monsters all joined together. Terror freezes my body in place. I have walked through forests at midnight. I have traveled through the darkness of caves, but to step into death herself, fear is your sword. My sword? My strength. I take one step after another. The cloud looms closer, closer still. I take another step, and then I am inside it, consumed whole. I walk in a land of black mist and silver-white pillars. Within each pearly structure, a person hovers in eternal sleep, and over them I can see a faint reflection of myself peering in, wondering how their mortal life used to be. My heart pounds rhythmically in my chest. I'm grateful to feel it, to know that I am not dead here. A whisper floats through the mist now and then, the voice of Moritas calling out for me. I follow it, even though I don't know where she is leading me. I pass one row of pillars after another. Their luminous glow reflects against my skin. I walk until I lose count of how many rows I've passed, and when I look over my shoulder in the direction I first came, I can see nothing but rows of these pillars all around. Are the others wandering through their own nightmare of pillars searching for me? Now and then, I see ghostly figures walking the paths amongst the moonstone too, figures that I can never look at directly. Perhaps those are lost souls, ghosts. Perhaps Moritas is speaking to the others, each in turn. Adelina. Moritas sounds closer now. I turn back to the path before me, and then I stop short. The face inside the pillar closest to me. Her eyes closed, and her expression peaceful, belongs to the former queen of Kenetra, Julieta. Her dark hair seems to float inside the column of moonstone, and her bare arms are crossed over her chest. I take a hesitant step toward her. There are no signs of any wounds on her body, no evidence of Terran's sword cutting through her chest. She is pristine, forever preserved in the underworld. I study her face in a way I never did when she was alive. She was beautiful. Enzo looked so much like her. I continue walking. Then I realize that the pillars now nearest to me are all people I once knew. There are Inquisition soldiers. The Night King of Maritas is here as well. His brows no longer furrowed in anger. Dante hovers nearby too. There is Gemma, her purple marking stretching across her peaceful face. I utter a whisper of a prayer as I pass her, asking for her forgiveness, and then force myself onward, recognizing one face after another. I pause for a moment on Taryn, who now stays encased in his own pillar, arms crossed over his chest, lost to eternal night. It is the most serene I have ever seen him, and I find myself hoping that he has at last found some semblance of peace. And there is Enzo. I stop before his pillar.